live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Brent Martineau.
You know, I don't know if you ever heard the show that Mike and Mojo did. They're doing the fantasy show now on Sirius XM, but they used to do the Running with MJD show. And I hear him dancing in the end zone there. Mojo used to come in studio and basically open up the phone lines for fans to call in and suggest what dance he should do that week. Right? And it was always a lot of fun, and you'd go to the games and, you know, he would pick the dance. There would be three or four finalists that week on the show, and then some caller would pick whatever Mojo was going to do in the end zone. I like the buckets dance, you know, with the A-team. I enjoy that. But, man, it was fun.
Yeah, he mixed it up quite a bit. And I remember we would talk to him a lot about those dances. You got to remember when Maurice Jones-Drew, now that we get years past his playing days, I think some of the folks forget just how big he was from a national landscape because of fantasy football. I mean, we talk fantasy football all the time. And Allen Robinson, when we caught up with him at the Super Bowl, he talked about, hey, people know who I am now because of fantasy football. Well, that's the way Maurice Jones-Drew was, you know? I mean, more popular on a national level, I would argue, than Fred Taylor was, as great as he was, and through all those good years, just because of the fantasy football stuff. And so he had fun with the fans, and that's Mojo. I mean, we all know who he is. He loved that stuff. But you always wonder what he was going to do, whether it was blowing the kisses, the bow, the bucket dance, the whatever.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, every week he would let callers call in and pick what he was going to do that week. He'd have to work on it. You know, it was one of those things where he's committing to the couple hours of work to not look like a fool when he's going to do whatever dance he happens to pick.
Get in front of a mirror.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You're probably right. Mojo was a more well-known commodity around the NFL than Fred Taylor was. I don't think he was a better football player than Fred Taylor was, but he was more well-known. And it's funny, the guys that truly embrace the fantasy football side of things, the fans really embrace them back. And the guys that are abrasive about it, it's at this point, it's a why. You know, I mean, why be abrasive about it? Okay, you don't love fantasy football. That's fine. No one's saying that you can't have that opinion about it, but there's no reason to share that opinion anymore. It's way too big a monster to try to fight against it at this point. And really, it's what drives the popularity of the NFL, is that gambling has always been the kind of shadow of professional sports, and fantasy sports is like this face of gambling, almost, where it is you and your friends putting $20 on the line or $200 on the line for a season of fantasy football or whatever you're doing, and it's this face that you can have on it and talk about it week to week without it feeling like that shadow that gambling has always been in the sports world.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken it beyond levels people would ever imagined. I think, you know, equate it to like radio, right? And radio is, you go after the P1 listener is that hardcore listener, right? And P2 is kind of that fringe listener you try to grab. I think that's the way my knowledge of that is limited, but I think that's the way it is. Well, it's kind of like that, I think, for football. Your hardcore fan is going to watch, but what it's created now is kids, women, people of all ages having an interest in football, whether it's just to see how they did. It might not be that tie to a team or tie to a player, or really do they care who wins the game. It's more, even if you're down 32-7, you might still be in it. You need one more catch to win the game.
Garbage,
so I mean, it really creates that. So maybe Tony, the key is maybe we should have fantasy radio or something.
Hey, that'd be cool.
We attract that fringe person.
I don't know how
I have no idea how we keep score.
Yeah, I don't know how we pull that off, but we got to come up with a scoring system for some fantasy sports on the radio.
I tell you, the hype around the Jags offense this year, and you're starting to see a couple more articles out this weekend, the silly season when people start projecting and writing about things, and there's a lot of momentum for already the Jags being somewhat of a vogue pick to break out as a football team, but really as an offense. And they look at that offense and say, this offense could maybe take new heights if you look at what Allen Robinson did.
Sure.
And then he continued to do in the Pro Bowl, had a good week at the Super Bowl when he was doing interviews. Blake Bortles, same thing. So I think people latch on to that, and that's why. People know this offense now because they know who Allen Hurns is. I mean, hardly anybody knew who Allen Hurns was a couple years ago.
No.
They know who Allen Hurns is because of the fantasy stuff. And then obviously the bigger name guys like T.J. Yeldon, who was drafted, and people knew him at Alabama. I saw somewhere that he was even projected, hey, keep an eye on this guy from a fantasy perspective next year.
Yeah, no doubt. And especially in PPR leagues, because he did look like he could be a productive receiver coming out of the backfield. And it's something I was thinking about this morning listening to the drill on the way in. And they were talking about the quarterbacks that the Denver defense faced and some of the other runs that defenses have gone on, like the great defenses of all time, the kind of runs they had to go on to go win a championship, and maybe that was the most difficult run from a opposing quarterback perspective, is they beat Roethlisberger, they beat Brady, and then they beat the MVP this year in Cam Newton. And just how impressive that was, especially with how kind of mediocre the offense was for the whole season. And I was listening to it and thinking about it, and I was thinking, have there been some really good, maybe even great defenses that get overlooked because of the offenses they were playing with, you know, on Super Bowl winning teams? Because we gravitate so much towards the offensive side of the ball. And the conversation with the Jags this offseason and the hype surrounding what they could potentially do in 2016 is about how good everyone expects this offense to be, take that next step forward, and can that be enough to carry them? I don't know that we've seen a whole lot of teams be completely carried by the offensive side of the ball with no real answers that you can see yet on the defensive side. And I was thinking about that on my way in this morning, and it's just, have we overlooked teams? Do we overhype teams because of what we see them do from an offensive perspective and forget every year we get to the playoffs and the best defenses rise? The best defenses in the playoff run, they rise. And every year it feels like we forget that's how it's going to work. When everything is said and done, odds are the better defensive team is going to be the one holding the trophy.
Yeah, you go back to the greatest show on turf, really. I mean, if you're thinking about the modern, you know, era, modern for us, I mean, in the last 15 years, they were awesome, obviously, offensively, and did some things. But I go back to the Super Bowl when I was at with the Patriots, and people forget this probably. But that was Tom Brady early on, and this wasn't known as a prolific offense.
No.
You know, it was known as a functional offense. They were doing some things, but they had very little at the wide receiver position even back then. But the defense was the one carrying the day. It was Bill Belichick's defense. Now you go back to the Patriots for the last 5 or 6 years. Do you even remember really a great defense of the Patriots? I mean, have they had a great defense? Probably not. I would say the one that carried, the greatest show on turf carried, I think. So you're talking underrated. St. Louis's defense was probably a little underrated.
Yeah,
I think
they
were still good.
Yeah.
But also, I think probably the one that would stick out to me, Tony, would be, and they didn't win the Super Bowl, but the 18-0 Patriots season. It felt like you didn't even need a defense that year. I mean, they had Randy Moss. I mean, they were scoring at will down the field, which was so rare in the NFL. And the Patriots have done that from time to time. But that's probably the one that sticks out to me that I couldn't tell you how good their defense was.
Right.
It looked like it was just a dominating offensive effort. But they didn't win the Super Bowl. So it speaks to your point.
And it's kind of the same thing 2 years ago with Denver. I don't know how good or bad they were defensively 2 years ago. I know the offense was maybe the best the NFL has ever seen. In a single season with Peyton Manning throwing 55 touchdowns. He threw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns in the AFC Championship game, and they went up against the best defense in the league and got it handed to him
in the
Super Bowl that year. And I don't know how good or bad the Denver defense was that year. It feels like they were even fine in that Super Bowl. It was just the Seattle defense was so overwhelmingly good.
Yeah, dominating.
In that football game, the fan feedback spotlight question of the day today, we ask every day. A question of the fans here on Jaguars Today. Today we're asking, because of just the way that Daytona 500 ended yesterday with Denny Hamlin just barely being able to inch out in front of Martin Truex Jr., who was actually my pick for the race this week.
Was he really?
Was Truex,
wow,
yeah.
Good stuff.
But just barely beating him to the line there. What is the most heartbreaking loss in Jaguars regular season history? The postseason... That's easy.
That's an easy one, yeah.
So what's the most heartbreaking loss in Jaguars regular season history? You can tweet us at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Brent AS360, at 1010XL Tyler, or on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on in the program. Brent Martineau joining me here on the program today. Dempsey taking the day off because I'm going to leave him for the rest of the week to head up to the NFL Combine.
So that's right. Good
so
for
he
you.
Wanted a day off. I think he's got some family in town too. Going to take him out to the golf course.
Good day to play golf.
Yeah, I'm not sure where he's playing today, but I'm sure that 18 holes is a part of the plan with Dempsey taking a day off today. So he'll be back in the saddle tomorrow. Martineau alongside today. We want to get into just how close are the Jags. We talked about teams overlooking how good or bad defenses are on some of these great all-time teams. Well, how close are the Jags on defense to being able to be a competitive team and maybe push for that playoff spot that some of these experts are already talking about here early on in February for this offseason. We'll dig into that as we continue along on a Monday edition, a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. A Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey taking the day off. I'll be leaving after today, heading up to the NFL Combine for the back half of the week. So Dempsey will be back tomorrow. Brent Martineau alongside today. It's like part of the team at least back together here on Jaguars Today. Dempsey's out, and he's probably a little bit jealous that I get to sit here with you, Brent, and shoot.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I bet he is. Knowing Dempsey, I bet he is.
What a lot of fun. I always forget. The time goes by. I don't ever say time goes by fast. It feels like days are sometimes 40 hours long. But I forget how long we did the show before things changed. It was about a year, maybe?
A little over a year.
A little over a year?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And
I just want to let you know, too, these guys in the afternoon still make me check my movie and music knowledge. It's unbelievable. I thought I got away from that when I left you guys.
Oh, no. At least they're not doing the Top 5 Fridays where every other week we were doing like some pop culture thing, almost just to torture you a little bit, just to see what we'd get if we could, how many weeks in a month can we get Brent to do something with Sister Christian? was a challenge that we put to ourselves, and we found out that if we do two pop culture shows a month, that we'd get two Sister Christians.
There you go.
That would just be the way it is. Yeah, no doubt about it.
As we're motoring.
Tony Smith and Brent Martineau here with you on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today, and I was looking at some of the stats just because you got me curious about where St. Louis was, because I thought I remember they were pretty good defensively the year they won the Super Bowl. Well, I go back and look. They were the number one ranked offense for 3 years in a row in points and yardage from 99 to 2001. So they won the Super Bowl in 99 with the greatest show on turf. They were fourth in points defensively, sixth in yardage. So they were a top five defense that year that they won the Super Bowl. The next year, number one in offense in the league, they dropped down to 31st in defense, lost in the wild card round of the playoffs. And that's a drastic difference for them.
Yeah.
They went from 13 wins to 10 in the regular season that year, jumped back up to 14 the year that they went to play the New England Patriots. They lost that Super Bowl, again, with the number one ranked offense, but with the number seven ranked defense that year. So I think the defense was probably overlooked. They were in the shadow of what that offense was able to do. And look, it's like Indianapolis for years where you don't have to do as much. When you have a 14-17-point fourth-quarter lead, it really is about just letting your guys loose, and you force that late turnover. Now the game's over, and I think it affects what you are defensively. The Jags, it doesn't feel like they're that dominant on the offensive side yet. They certainly have an offense that is coming together a lot better than anything we've seen for the last 10 years. Here in Jacksonville, it would appear, and you have another year to watch these guys mature. Hopefully, Julius Thomas is a bigger part of what they're doing offensively this year. T.J. Yeldon, who was solid at times last year, maybe he takes another step forward for them as well. They certainly need to figure out what to do with the run game, and those are all questions that we have going into this offseason. But the biggest questions are all on the defensive side of the ball, where you have questions about all three levels of the defense right now, specifically up front. So the big question for the Jags going into the offseason for me is, how close or how far away are they really on the defensive side of the ball? And I think it's a tougher question to answer because of the big question marks you have with maybe their two best players on that side. I think you can throw Telvin in that argument too, but maybe their two best players on that side with Cedric Marks and Dante Fowler, what are they? We just don't know what they're going to be in 2016 and beyond.
Yeah, listen, I think you can close that gap too, not just with personnel, but with an offense that is more consistent and good. And so I think the examples you gave of St. Louis, it's a great example that that offense does help the defense. I'm not sure that defense without a number one offense is seventh or sixth in the league or fourth, whatever it is. I think they put a lot of pressure on you to score and keep up. And like you said, you play with leads a lot too. Also believe, listen, the offense is like hitting, you know. And we talk about it with baseball. Pitching and defense will keep you in it. Well, hitting will come and go, and I think the offense does sometimes come and go. We saw that a little bit this year. The big difference for the Jags is they just have to take away some of the mistakes. If they want to elevate that offense, they need to take away the huge mistakes that they had throughout the course of the year. A lot of that falls, of course, on Blake Bortles' shoulders to not make the big interceptions at crucial times or fumbles, whatever it might be. But the gap can certainly close with that offense taking a next step up and really being an elite offense in the National Football League. To answer your question, though, I do think they can close that gap just from a defensive personnel standpoint quickly. I think a lot of people wondered if when Dave Caldwell said, yes, it's easier to fix the defense, can we fix the defense quick and overnight, basically? I think they can come close to do that. It depends what your definition of fix is. Can they become dominant? I'm not sure they can come dominant because in 1 year you still need to develop an attitude, and this group, whatever they bring together, is going to have to mesh. But Todd Walsh, I think, has one of the best jobs in the NFL because if you look at the numbers, it's almost guaranteed that he'll go up. The numbers defensively, their rankings can't be as low as they were. I mean, they were bad defensively in terms of how many points they allowed and things like that. So I think automatically you will play better because you'll have better personnel. And it was much like this offense for the last decade. The offense didn't have to do too much this last year to be the best it's been in about 8 or 9, 10 years because of the way it's been. So I'll add one more thing about the closing the gap too, Tony. And I go back to the offense where they can really help. And this is where you said Peyton Manning and that Indianapolis Colts offense did this a bunch. I think Tom Brady does this a bunch. And it will be a word I will use probably a lot this offseason, but I get tired of me hearing it. But I think the next part of the development in Blake Bortles is dictating play. And can he, when the time comes, can he say, all right, we need to go on a 10-play drive? I think that's what Manning and those great quarterbacks are so good at. When they need to chew up clock, when their defense is tired, or when they just feel like it's a pivotal part of the game. And it might be in the second quarter, not necessarily in the fourth quarter.
Sure.
Do they always have to be quick strike, taking the chances down the field? Can you hit the 4-yard pass to extend it into a first down, keep the clock moving, keep your defense off the field? I think that's what the great quarterbacks are really good at doing. And we'll see. I'm not sure if that's a year three progression for a young quarterback, for Blake Bortles. I'd like to see it, and I think that's the difference, though, for them being elite and really making it further and possibly into the postseason. He's got to be able to do that more frequently.
I think that is what separates the really good quarterbacks in the league from the elite ones. It's the really good quarterbacks in the league can win 8 to 10 games, you know, almost on a consistent basis, but they're going to have those years where they only win, you know, 6 or 7, and the defense just isn't good enough to hold them up. I think you saw that in Baltimore this year. I think Flacco is really good. I don't think he's elite. I think Eli Manning is really good. I don't think he's elite. And when the defenses can't stand up around him, you watch how difficult it is for them to carry those teams. And I think you watch guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, what they've been able to do, you know, in tandem in this league, and they just carry teams to 10 wins every year. And it really didn't matter what was happening on the defensive side of the ball. Once they found their stride in the league, they were able to carry teams to that kind of momentum, that kind of mark. I think it's difficult to place that expectation on Blake because you are talking about two of, whatever you think of Peyton Manning, two of the top 5 to 10 quarterbacks that have ever played the game. And they happen to both be playing in the same era. And to have that kind of expectation heaped upon you to be the next Manning or Brady is a really difficult expectation. But can he take the next step in a career where maybe the Jags were content not playing him his first year because they wanted to give him the opportunity to watch? Does he learn more playing? Yeah. And he took his bumps and bruises his rookie year. Obviously learned from that. Got better in his second year. How much more progression does he make in his third? And the reason they drafted him when they did, looking at the quarterbacks that were coming out, it feels like Dave Caldwell felt like the ceiling was higher on Blake than it would be on Mariota or Winston or whatever else they could get in the draft for the next year or two. That the ceiling would be higher with this guy than it would be with those. Where is the ceiling for Blake Bortles? I think with kind of the erratic play that we've seen from him, it's difficult to figure out what exactly that may be because we are watching a guy who looks like a guy who played for Central Florida that's trying to figure out the ropes of what it is to be a big-time football player and makes big-time plays but still makes those bonehead plays where you're like, where'd that come from? Like, you feel like that should be gone by now, and it's just not yet out of his repertoire.
Yeah, and I think what we'll, you know, in terms of the controlling the tempo, if you will, or that dictation of play that we're talking about, that next step, I don't know when it happens, but look at a guy like Cam Newton. He did that this year. You know, I'm not sure you would say he did that in any other year. He put up big numbers and good numbers, but I think the maturation process for Cam Newton came this. It took 5 years, though, Tony. I mean, it takes some time. Nobody wants to wait. Like you said, should he be making those plays in year two? I'm not sure he shouldn't. You know, I'm not sure he shouldn't be making those mistakes still in year two. I don't know. I mean, I think it's different for every guy. We try to label it and cookie cutter it and blanket and say, okay, well, this guy did this guy did that. There are a lot of projections now that look what this guy did in his first 2 years, and Derek Carr is going to project better than Blake Bortles because of the first 2 years. I don't think we know. I think the size of the step he took from year one to year two is something that everybody should latch onto, because he put in the work, remade his entire being of a quarterback, really, the way he did things fundamentally.
He flipped it on his head.
But he was able to do it in a short time. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. It took 4 months to basically go do it, and I still don't think he's perfected it. He's going to tweak that again. So now the interest is, okay, where does the game go from year two to year three, his development, how much better? I don't think it will be as drastic. I think it will be a little bit more subtle. But I think I think that's really the Blake you should latch on to. Not really the mistakes and even the touchdowns. I mean, that's fun stuff. But he took a huge, giant step there to make things happen. And I think that tells you a little bit about his makeup and his ability to fix. And now he gets a year or two of the same system and all that good stuff. We just talked to Chad Henne out there about coming back and being that continuity. Everything's the same for Blake for a second year. I think that sets him up to make another step. Not as big, because there isn't as big of a gap, but he'll make another big step.
Sure, and I said it last offseason, and I still believe this about Blake, that Blake's not going to get in his own way in his NFL career. It's never going to be the work ethic that gets Blake Bortles. It's, can he do it or not? You know, does he have the ability in him to be that type of quarterback? Because if it's there, he's going to get it out of himself. That's the kind of work ethic he has. It's the way that he approaches it. It's why he spent all that time in California last offseason. It's why when we talk to him at the Super Bowl, he's not talking about any vacations he's taken. He's talking about, this is when I'm going to get an opportunity to work with my guys. This is my plan for this offseason to try to get better for next year. Blake is not going to get in his own way. It's a question of, is it in him? And I think you saw enough of a glimpse this year, going from year one to year two, to say, yeah, I think it's in him. And it's just a matter of how far he can reach with the ability that he has is basically the question we're asking right now. And I think on the defensive side, when you mentioned the comments of Dave Caldwell and it's easier to build the defense, it's pretty simple in that you don't have to find the quarterback. It's so difficult to find that guy. And on defense, you don't have to have that guy. Now, does it help? You know, if you find Von Miller, who is just an extraordinary talent, does it help? Certainly it helps you to find those guys that are just extraordinary at whatever position they're playing. J.J. Watt, they help you that much more, but you don't have to have that guy to be solid on that side of the ball. To win championships in this league, to be consistent in this league, you probably do have to have that kind of quarterback. And if you're going to do it consistently, did the Ravens win one with Trent Dilfer? Yeah. Jacksonville doesn't want to win one. You know, the idea for Caldwell is, we want to win a Super Bowl, but we want to be in that conversation for 10 years.
Well, once they found Flacco, they've been in it
right
for years and years and years.
Right.
You know, they go to the postseason
That's
just
the
about
idea.
Every year. So, and Houston's the best example of that to me. I mean, they got the best football player on the planet defensively, and what have they done? I mean, with the best football player on the planet defensively, they won 2 games 1 year.
Right.
You know, and they still are just a fringe playoff team at best in a weak division. So I think it's a very good example of it. You can't just have one, but I know we got to go to break. We'll talk more about that defense. And I think if you start putting the names on paper that they potentially 2 weeks from now could have, and then a month after that with the draft combined with what they already have, I think because everything looks good on paper this time of year, it actually might shape up to say, that could be fixed. I mean, I think people will go into training camp, because they always do, but I think they'll go into training camp saying this defense could take a huge jump based on the personnel added, again, on paper. Will it play out on the football field, injuries, and people living up to expectations, and the unknowns, like you mentioned, of Dante Fowler and Derek Marks? There'll be a lot of question marks.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest question of this offseason is, what is Dante Fowler? He was drafted at number 3. What is he? We haven't had an opportunity to see him on the field. How dominant will he be? in his first year on the field for this Jaguars team, and how are they going to fill in the other pieces? It's a bit of a cloudy picture right now, but free agency getting started in the not-too-distant future, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about where they could be looking in the draft and trying to balance out those issues of character versus injury, which is more of a risk at this point in a young player's career if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, with some of the names that are being talked about with that number five pick. As we continue along, it's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Tony Smith, Brent Martineau, we're here with you on Jaguars Today. Oh,
one of the greatest songs ever.
Feels like a top five Friday right now. Tony Smith, Brent Martineau here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on Jaguars Today. As we listen to a little Sister Christian here. Every week, man.
Takes you back.
Every week. If we had anything involving music, this came up. If we had anything involving movies, it felt like The Sandlot came up.
Yeah, Sandlot did come up.
Which I can't blame you. The Sandlot's great, but every week, man?
I had nothing to fall back on, guys. I like to think I'm a little more well-rounded now. I recently, in the probably about a month ago, upgraded the package at home to get HBO and Showtime channels.
Oh, yeah?
So now I'm catching up on some old things.
Like what?
I couldn't name the movies. I've probably seen some stuff that I hadn't seen in either forever or in its entirety. You know, that just plays out. I try to flip through some of the old ones when they pop in. But I'm trying to think also now of a name of one that I've seen in the last couple of weeks. I'm not good with these actors' names.
And no.
You know what they do? What I found out, though, because, again, I'm new to this. I never have had HBO. But the reason I got it was because I could do it for, like, the same, like $2 more, you know, than what I was paying. But they you know this because, obviously, you probably watch this stuff all the time. But basically, they must pick, like, an actor.
Oh, yeah. They'll do a spotlight.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And then they just play, like, 10 of their movies throughout the week.
Yeah.
Like, it runs for about a week or so.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll do
it's
that
funny
because
you're just flipping through and you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's in this.
Yeah, Comedy Central this week. I know it's not HBO, but for whatever reason, it's been, like, Adam Sandler week. I think it was, like, the 20th anniversary of Happy Gilmore.
Okay, that must have been something.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, every time I turn over to Comedy Central, you know, I'm used to watching, you know, South Park or something in the middle of a Saturday afternoon. Instead, it's been Big Daddy and Billy Madison. It feels like just constantly Big Daddy and Billy Madison have been on Comedy Central.
I saw an Adam Sandler on Netflix. Netflix does not have good movies.
You gotta
to pick from.
You gotta know where to go.
But they had this Adam Sandler. I think the Cobbler. Or something like that.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. It was kind of a weird role.
Yeah.
For Adam Sandler.
It's unbelievable to me. I haven't seen that movie. I've heard bad things about it.
Yeah.
The guy who directed that is the guy who directed Spotlight, which is up for Best Picture. Which
really?
Just blows my mind that the last movie he did before the one that is like 97% on Rotten Tomatoes and up for Best Picture and all these accolades is The Cobbler with Adam Sandler. It's like,
yeah.
How do these two things
correlate? It's
just
kind of weird seeing him in that role. But,
yeah.
I mean, actually, I didn't think it was terrible. I'm not a great movie critic. I don't see many movies that are bad. That's what Light was 300 was on last night.
Oh.
I hadn't seen that. I wonder if it was on because of isn't that the Daytona guy?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
The driver Butler. Start your engines?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why he did the whole
Has
Daytona.
He done like anything else? Because should I know that guy other than that?
He's done some other stuff.
He did say, this is Daytona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Sparta.
Yeah, yeah.
He was playing that line.
I had to have Weber explain that to me.
Why is this guy changing up the way we start races? All of a sudden, Brent Martineau is getting a little traditional over there.
A lot of people love 300 is like, people love that movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like maybe like one of the favorites.
Well, because it's kind of the first time we had seen all that like slow-mo, really kind of artistic
like cinematography
style of shooting.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah. And
it's more for that than the actual movie?
Well, and it's kind of a cool, it's a really like cool manly story,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
These three guys holding off the entire army, basically, is a really kind of cool story. It's based somewhat in reality, not really, but it's based on a folklore, basically. And it got turned into a graphic novel, a comic, and Zack Snyder got a hold of it and said, well, let me turn this into a movie, which he's done a couple times in his career. And it was a lot of fun. Like, that's what 300 is, a lot of fun. It's brutal, bloody, massacred, slow-mo shots where you're going, how did that dude get that ripped? Like, what did he eat for the 4 months before they shot this movie? Type of movie is what 300 is. Talking little Jags.
Yeah, let's get back to Jags. Yeah. Let's not. I don't want to talk movies with you.
You've gone down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And we were talking about defensively and how they can build this thing up and get it to a point where they are contending at least for the division title, which doesn't seem that far away, and the division that they're playing in, and probably should have been competing for it more in 2015 than they did when everything was said and done. In all honesty, the defense just wasn't good enough to hold. Look, you score 39 points against Tennessee, you can't lose.
No.
You lose four games where you score 25 or more points. That just can't happen.
It's unheard of, really.
Right. If it happens once in a season, you're like, okay, that's kind of an abnormality. It's the one against the rule. But when you do it four times in a season, it's an issue. With what you're doing defensively, I was looking up some of their franchise statistics. It's the second worst season they've ever had defensively as far as points allowed. It was 1 point better than 2013, what they did this year. They gave up 449 in 2013, 448 in 2015. So a significant step back from where they were 2 years ago. On the defensive side of the ball, maybe the loss to Derek Marks is partially to blame for that, but we've talked about Marks and Fowler. The free agency picture is cloudy to me. And it's cloudy to me because last year at this time, everybody knew the Jags were going to sign Julius Thomas.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't know, you knew the Jags were going to sign Julius Thomas at this time last year. I don't know that there's anybody that I can point to that it feels that way right now. And I think that's partially because the young pass rushers that could be available, I'm not sure will be when everything is said and done. Like Olivier Vernon.
He's probably that guy.
Right. Right? I wouldn't be shocked, though, if he does get the franchise tag because he's in his mid-20s and he is a very productive player. Can Miami afford to let him walk out that door? And if they have no other option than to franchise him and figure it out from there, I wouldn't be surprised if they went that route. And if you're looking at trying to improve the pass rush, where do you go after that? If you're the Jags in free agency, is there anything out there that's really going to help you improve that part of your game? I'm not sure that the answer to that is yes.
Yeah, that's why I've said a lot of times that I think the fallback could be, you know, if you asked me one guy that I, like months ago, that I was like, okay, I think he might be here. And because of some of these franchise tag possibilities, you never can guarantee that you're going to get a free agent. I mean, I still wonder if a guy like Bruce Irvin ends up in Jacksonville. I mean, knows Gus Bradley, knows the system. All the stuff adds up. I don't have to tell you about that. You all know that. But, I mean, it just makes sense. And you need bodies. You need guys. He's a young guy. You can get after the quarterback. You add speed, right? You get a little faster. So I think if you're on my most realistic or most likely, if I were to put, like, money on it, and this really goes back months ago, I would probably have said him. I think it's changed a little bit. I do think Vernon hits the market. For whatever reason, I think he's going to do that. I'm not sure I would let him go if I was Miami, but if you're not going to sign him long-term, is it worth also just franchising him for a year? So depends how they feel about that and if they think they'll be capable. They spent so much money on Ndamukong Suh. So I think he has become the hot name, that Julius Thomas kind of name. Olivier Vernon has certainly become that. And I also think Mario Williams is a possibility. You mentioned you don't have to be 27 years old. You could be 30, 31 years old.
Certainly.
You know, people have talked about Chris Long because he got cut. I think if you're going to sign Chris Long, I think I'd rather sign Mario Williams. You know, I mean, it's going to be more expensive probably, but I think he still has something. And I actually think this is a great year to sign a guy like Mario Williams because I think he's going to play with a chip. I think he's a little ticked off at what happened in Buffalo and the way he was. And he, at least the talk, that it sounds like he could be playing with a little purpose. And I know people say he takes plays off. He's not really a team guy. I just don't worry about that here. I don't really have that big worry here in Jacksonville about that part of it. I think you can get a year or two out of a guy like that.
I tend to agree with you. I think that he certainly is a name worth checking out in Mario. He's such a good player and has been such for a while now in the league. The question that Dempsey keeps bringing up, and I think it's a valid one with Mario Williams, is the word out of Buffalo, whether it be from anonymous teammates or whoever, but the word coming out of Buffalo is that basically he quit.
Yeah.
that because of what he was being asked to do in the defense, he didn't like it, so he wasn't going to have any part of it. And I do think that's a bit of a concern. I can see where you bring him down here and basically tell him, go get the quarterback.
That's right.
You know, we're not going to ask you to play.
Hey, Sabario, we'll make you happy.
Right.
You do what you want. Go get the quarterback.
Right. I can see that scenario happening in Jacksonville, but it is a bit worrisome that, and that's the second time we've heard about that with Mario Williams
in
his career.
It is. And that's why I said I'm not as concerned about, and I've said this before, I'm a little, I get, we talk about it maybe too much with Gus, but I think he gets the most out of guys. You know, I think you don't ever hear that in the locker room the last 3 years, even when things are going bad, that a guy isn't playing hard. And so I think he could take a guy like Mario Williams, and I think it would be a perfect match, right? You get a guy that feels good in this locker room. He's going to do what he wants to do, what he's used to doing. And I do think when you can get that guy that is going to play with a purpose, he's already got enough money. I think he's going to play this year wherever he ends up to try to tell the folks in Buffalo, you screwed it up. I think he's going to be playing to try to say, hey, Rex Ryan, you messed this up, just as much as he's going to be playing for the team down here. And they kind of like that sometimes in a guy, especially with a guy that has a ton of talent and still has something left. So I think it's a possibility. If you're going to go with a veteran guy, and I think they need to add a few defensive ends. So I wouldn't mind seeing Mario Williams here. It's always risky in free agency. We know that. I think it's a chance worth taking potentially on the dollars with Mario Williams.
Yeah, and I think, look, the NFL is it's in the hands of the owners. Like, all of it seems to shift towards the ownership side of things as far as where the leverage is. It's come a little bit more towards the player side in the last handful of years with the contracts that they're getting. But it is a little bit in their favor. And the guys like Mario Williams who got paid the way he did, like Ndamukong Suh who got paid the way he did, right? We mentioned Reggie Nelson who didn't get paid that way, but just how comfortable they are with what they're being asked to do. I think NFL teams lose sight with some of these players sometimes that you shouldn't be necessarily asking them to fit your scheme. If you feel like you got a really good one, maybe a great one, let them do what they do and fit them into your defense instead of asking them to fit into yours. And I think Mario feels like that type of guy. When he's been on a team where they tell him, go get the quarterback, he's been great. And when he's been on a team that says, sometimes you're going to go get the quarterback, and sometimes you're going to play coverage, and sometimes we need you to do this, he gets unhappy about it. And I think in Jacksonville, if you brought him here and said, go get the quarterback, that's all we want you to do is go get the quarterback, that I think he would be fine with that. But you have to understand that if you ever get to the point where you are asking him to do something else, you're going to tick him off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just don't think that's the case here, though. You wouldn't ask
I don't
him
either.
To do something else. Right?
I don't either.
I think you would make him happy. Obviously, you know, he'd be in a different spot and have something to prove. I think you're right about when you ask guys to do something different, it's not always well received unless they're just not having success that they're doing. And he's had a ton of success doing getting after the passer.
He knows it works.
The other thing I believe people do that too as well in the NFL is they ask guys to change weight, right? Add weight, lose weight. It just doesn't seem like that works out for the guy most often. We've seen it happen around here a couple of times. Add weight, didn't work out. So
sure.
I think you're right.
Terrence Knight didn't hear because he just wouldn't lose weight.
Well, and then he just wouldn't lose it. And
yeah.
Same thing in Denver, but I think that's why they didn't take a chance and re-sign him. But I think I think you're right. These guys are creatures of habit, and they're used to doing one thing over and over the same way they've done it for a long time. It's a routine, and that's where you're put at your best. Anybody, any line of work, you kind of do something different, you don't feel as comfortable. And I think if they did just bring a guy like Mario Williams in to do that, I think they find that out in about 3 days. They can go make some calls, investigate that part of it. Is this true? Is this a guy that's going to do that? And you figure it out. But I've said it for the last couple of years. This is a franchise and an organization that needs stars. They need big impact players. Sometimes you have to take a chance on guys like that. I wasn't opposed to bringing Sue in if you thought he was going to be a game changer and he was that kind of player. Mm-hmm. I wasn't opposed to bringing a guy like Harvin in and taking a chance on him. Now, again, you go back and you see some of that stuff, you know why they didn't. Because they probably did their homework, like, no way, we can't touch that. But I think if they determine that they can, and it's a calculated risk, especially when he's a really good football player, I think you do it.
Yeah, it's one of the big questions for free agency. Obviously, the draft as well, with some of the names that are going to be mentioned with the Jags attached to that number five pick. Character, specifically against injury, and how do you weigh those things out? We'll talk about that as we continue along. This date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL, coming up next right here on a Wild West Guns and Gold edition of Jaguars Today.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, you know, they skip these dates even on NFL.com. They don't try to fill you in with anything that's happening on February 22nd, apparently, in the history of the National Football League.
What would have happened?
I don't know, the long and storied one that it is. But here's what we got, a couple birthdays of note. Khalil Mack, 24 years old today, so happy birthday to Khalil, who might have been a Jaguar if they hadn't decided to go with the quarterback. And short-time Jaguars fullback and Florida State grad Lonnie Pryor, celebrating his 26th birthday today.
Way to dig deep, that a baby.
Yeah, I know he's a local favorite.
Yes,
there's
is.
A lot of people around here who love Lonnie, so happy birthday to him. Also today, slingshot goalposts. So they went from the H's to the slingshot goalpost, and the 6-foot border that we see around NFL fields that's in effect still to this day became standard in the National Football League in 1967 on this date, February 22nd. Why February 22nd? I don't know. Maybe that's when the league calendar officially flipped over for 1967. Not exactly sure, but on this date, you went from the H to the slingshot field goal post. I was reading a little bit about the history of field goal posts in football. I know college football in the late 20s moved the field goal post to the back of the end zone. And people complained that it was too difficult to kick field goals, so they moved it back to the front of the end zone after like 4 years. And then it took a long time before the NFL ever moved it back. Those rugby-style goalposts that were in the front of the end zone as opposed to the back forever. And then it just became too easy. Fans started complaining that teams were kicking too many chip shot field goals, so they moved it to the back of the end zone sometime after
that. Can you imagine how that would change some of the offenses run around the goal line?
Oh, I know.
Now.
In a passing league,
yeah.
If you had that post just sitting there in the middle of the field, there at the front
probably
of the
a
end
lot,
zone.
A lot less illegal picks.
Probably. Well, it wouldn't be illegal. You just run them to
just
the post.
Run through the post. That's
just
right.
Just run them to the post, no doubt about it. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Tony and Brent, a bunch of miscreants make the Honda Drive around the NFL today. Cowboys rookie pass rusher Grandy Gregory assured Dallas fans after the Cowboys took a chance on him in the second round of the draft last year that any issues of his past were the result of immaturity and stubbornness, not because of marijuana. Well, Gregory was suspended over the weekend for the first 4 games of the 2016 season after violating the league's substance abuse policy. Ian Rappaport on Twitter pointed out that according to the league's policy, that is Randy Gregory's 4th failed test in less than a year. You'll remember the first one back at the combine, which landed him in the drug program. The second failure is a 2-game fine. The third failure is a 4-game fine. And now this 4th failed test lands him a 4-game suspension. The next failed test for Gregory would be a 10-game suspension. Former Cowboys running back Joseph Randall is back in the news for the wrong reasons, as he was popped early yesterday morning in Kansas on 3 counts of battery, 1 count of drug possession for marijuana, and 1 count of criminal damage. And more details are starting to come out about his arrest over the weekend, guys. Law enforcement in Wichita, Kansas says Randall tried to hit 3 people with his car, then tried to chase them into their home before forcing his way inside. Randall is still being held on $1,000 or $100,000 bond back in Wichita. That is his 5th arrest in the last 17 months. His other 4 arrests over the last 17 months, guys, were for marijuana, assaulting a Kansas City casino security guard, an outstanding warrant for speeding, and stealing underwear and cologne from Dillard's. And finally, one last story here in the Honda Drive around the NFL. The Gronk family party crew successfully returned this morning after a 3-day-long booze-infested, party-rocking-filled event. And here's my favorite line from a Boston Globe article posted this morning from a passenger on the Gronk cruise. She said, "Am I having a good time? Oh, my God, yes. Although I kind of don't remember last night, I might have blacked out," said a Framingham woman who identified herself as, "There's absolutely no way I'm telling you my name." According to the MMQB's Robert Klemko, who says he has a friend on the boat, Gronkowski had an interesting offer for a couple on the boat. Quote, this is a quote exactly from Gronk, according to Klemko's source. $10,000 right now if you bang in front of everyone. Gronk said that to a couple on the Gronk family party cruise.
Oh, my goodness. Gronk's never going to change, man. He's never going to change, and he's been spending his money well, apparently. Still hasn't dipped into any of his actual contract money. It's all been bonus money still to this point in his career that he's been spending. So building his own little empire as more and more Gronks come into the National Football League. Another one could get drafted here in the next couple months.
It is amazing how he plays by a different set of rules, you know, and when you produce like that, I guess it's part of it. But
even
we've
Belichick
accepted
will look the other way.
We've accepted his character, though. And forget about even just the Patriots. For you know, of course, they love the production. But it's just interesting how much everybody's wrapped around his fraternity-like, college-like style and said, it's okay. You know, everybody criticizes these guys for being role models and stuff, but we love Gronkowski the way he acts, even though I'm not sure you'd want your kid to kind of act like Gronkowski.
Sure, he's the court jester of the NFL, and that's okay. You know, as an adult fan, I can watch it and say, I don't want to do anything Gronk does. I don't want anyone that's related to me doing anything that Gronk does. But from afar, it's entertaining to watch Gronk do what Gronk does. And I think, you know, the other side of it is the Randall stories that you get. And maybe 30 years ago, we don't know about any of it, you know, and that's kind of the way the coverage of the league has changed with Pro Football Talk, which is why every fan base in America thinks Mike Florio hates them, is because he started a website basically saying, look, this stuff is going on behind the scenes. The NFL's basically been able to not have to say anything about it for its entire history and thought that fans would want to know. And what he thought is exactly correct. Fans want to know the dirt on all these guys that they're following on Sundays, and that's what Pro Football Talk started as to a large extent. That's what it still is. And it's guys like Randall who, you know, you see the elite high school players and the way they're treated once they get into the college ranks. We follow them all the way through that with some of our own local kids, and it's there's this danger of identifying yourself only as a football player. So when that kind of thing gets taken away from you, whether it be because of actions that maybe your college coach or your high school coach didn't want to punish because of how good an athlete you are, when you're not up to snuff against some of the other guys and they finally take that leash off of you a little bit, it feels like there are guys who just it spins out of control. And for Joseph Randall, unfortunately, it feels like he's one of those guys.
It's unbelievable.
It's out of control for him right now.
Yeah, and Dallas, you know, back to back there with the Gregory stories and Randall stories too. And you know, they've been a team and a franchise that has taken a ton of risks. Obviously, Hardy is one. And I talked about it. I said I'd be a bad GM because I'd probably take some risks that it proves out that you shouldn't take. I mean, there's a reason why. And again, they're privy to so much more information. You know, I bring that up with the Mario Williams stuff all the way through, you know, if a guy's been not so great in the community or had trouble with the law. You know, you brought up a couple of times, you know, where do you gauge the injury based on the medical stuff and also the personality, character flaws of a guy this time of year? I mean, the combine's picking up in Indianapolis this week. I think that is the most underrated part of the combine, that they will have a chance to get their medical staff in front of guys that they feel like they might like, and they also have a chance to sit in a room with them. More, not just the Senior Bowl guys, but now get to do it
sure
with some of the big guys too. And it's, to me, the most underrated part of it. I think that, I don't know this, but I think they learn so much this week behind closed doors that while everybody else is watching the 40-yard and the vertical and routes and drills and, you know, that's the sexy stuff. But I think their draft boards really maybe get moved around this week based on those medicals and based on the interviews more than not.
Yeah, and I think you only get so many opportunities to be around these guys and kind of vet that process of being able to get to know their personalities, make them answer the questions about whatever you have about whatever character flaws they deal with or have dealt with in their college careers. This is it. You know, you don't get a whole lot of opportunities to sit down, and there's seven rounds to a draft. It's not just the first round. You know, you're talking to guys who you might be considering in the fourth and fifth round and trying to feel those guys out as well, guys like Telvin Smith, that kind of thing, trying to get to know them. I feel like the Jags probably took as much advantage as they could of being around Noah Spence at the Senior Bowl. I feel like Gus Bradley spent the day with him. They did what they could to see if Noah Spence would be worth that number five pick. Are the character issues out of the way enough that they feel good about him? So they don't have to do that at the combine. They can concentrate on other things while some teams are trying to figure out what Noah Spence is that are picking there in the top 10 or 15.
That's the advantage.
Yeah, I think the Jags have a pretty solid idea of what they feel about Noah Spence, and it's not going to change a whole heck of a lot at the combine. He's going to test off the charts. It's what he's going to do. He and the other guy that's going to test off the charts, and everyone's going to be like, but where should he get picked? Robert Kimdichie is going to walk in and physically blow everybody's mind. Because there's no way a guy at his size should be able to do the things athletically that he's able to do. But when he's just asked to show his athleticism, you're going to be in awe of what he can do. And it's the questions about off-field stuff that are going to really affect where he's going to go in the National Football League draft. Talk a little bit about the combine here in a moment and some of the storylines, some of the players that we'll be keeping an eye on as they start rolling into Indianapolis a little bit later on in the week. I'll be heading up for Jaguars today, Wednesday through Friday. Here with Mike Dempsey. Dempsey will still be in Jacksonville. I'll be up at the Combine in Indianapolis along with Frank Frangie and Rick Ballew in the afternoons. And some of the storylines that we have our eye on as we look ahead to the rest of this week on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It is Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Rolling along on a Wild West Guns and Gold edition of Jaguars Today. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers, semi-auto pistols, rifles, shotguns, tactical rifles. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. Trade your gold for guns at guns4jacks.com. That's guns, the number 4, jacks.com. Tony Smith, Brent Martineau here with you. On a Monday edition of Jaguars Today, the fan feedback spotlight. We'll get to some of your answers here in about 20 minutes or so. You can respond on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at BrentAS360, at 1010XL Tyler. We're asking today, what is the most heartbreaking regular season loss in Jaguars history? We all know what your playoff answer would be. We'd go back to 99, and I'm not sure that anything else comes at all close to losing that game to Tennessee in 1999. But what about the regular season? And we're asking that question because of just how close Martin Truex Jr. was to winning the Daytona 500 yesterday. Heck, if he sidedrafts for another half second there off of Denny Hamlin, knocks him up a little bit more, maybe he wins that doggone race yesterday. So what's the most heartbreaking loss in Jaguars regular season history? If there's a story attached, feel free to send that along as well. We'll get to some of your answers here in a couple minutes. We were talking about the idea of character versus injury, and I don't think that shows up any more clearly for the Jags than the decision they could potentially have to make with the number five pick in the upcoming draft. It's pretty well known. Caldwell doesn't move down a whole lot. I think he asked for a lot to do it, and that's the reason that to this point they haven't done it. And I think through the first three drafts, there was nobody wanted to get up to two when they drafted Jokel. I think that he was so convinced that Bortles should be the pick that it was going to take a lot to get him out of that spot 2 years ago. And I think he felt like they were going to get the best pass rusher in the draft last year in Dante Fowler Jr., and that he fit what they wanted to do with the Leo and Otto so well that it would take a lot to get him off that spot too last year. The number five pick this year could be a bit of a different story. The names that we've been talking about to this point, Joey Bosa, Jalen Ramsey, the names that come up the most often, there certainly is a pretty good potential that they're both off the board by the time the Jaguars are picking, which would leave you with some other options that include Miles Jack coming off a knee injury if he's not picked up in the first four picks, which he certainly could be as well. They could go offensive line if Laremy Tunsil is still available. Would they be willing to move on from Luke Jokel at that position? Or a guy like Noah Spence, where the talent probably dictates that he should be considered in the top 10 and not beyond that. But do the off-field considerations drop him on the board enough that the Jags at five, even if those first, say the first four players on their board are gone, would they even consider a guy like Noah Spence at five? I know I would. I know I personally would, but my job's not on the line to say I'd pick Noah Spence. There's no risk for me. For Dave Caldwell, there's a significant risk. And I think it's interesting when you look back at the way the Jags have balanced kind of that injury versus character concern and some of the guys that they brought in. We were just talking about it a few moments ago on the break, Brent. I'm not sure that they do it in the top five, but I think there is a point where they're willing to do it.
Yeah, the dropping back possibility, I think, is more real this year than ever before because the draft is deep. Looks like there's a solid 20 deep, maybe even more, that people like. And the positional stuff is a little deeper, too. And the Jags could go in a variety of directions. I think you're locked into that defensive end spot, offensive tackle, QB in the top five. I think that's what Dave Caldwell really likes. Would they waver and go the free safety slash corner angle on a Jalen Ramsey? Yeah, I think they would because they really value that position. But outside of that, I don't see them picking a linebacker in the top 10 if they had a top 10 pick. I don't see them doing that, especially a guy with a knee injury. So I do think that the reality is they could drop back. I also think this is the year they could come up and maybe get back into the first round by trading away some other picks to try to put more of an emphasis on an impact player on that defensive side of the football. So I'll be interested to watch that too. And I thought they might do that. And there was some talk they could have done that last year if Gurley and Melvin Gurley Gordon had slipped. So, keep an eye on that. Or could you cash in on a couple picks? Because the picks are super important. Build through the draft. But I don't think the amount of picks are as important as they once were. They've spent a lot of draft picks in the last 3 years. You never can have enough. I get it. But you also only have so many positions. So if you can come up and get two starters in the first round and give away a couple of picks later on or whatever it might be, I think this is the time to do it. The balance, too, of, okay, we're building for the long term has now changed. Okay, we're building for the long term, but we also need to win now. You know, we want to sustain this for a long time, but we got to get it done. And I think that's where this whole offseason has changed. You mentioned you could go get a 31-year-old guy. That would be almost unheard of a couple of years ago, sure, as a big-dollar guy. Sure, they would fill in maybe a Chris Clemens or something. But I think that – so the mentality around here is changing a bit because now we're 4 years into it from Dave Caldwell's perspective too. That's what makes this offseason intriguing, I think, a little bit different than the last few under Dave Caldwell.
Yeah, and I think look, you still got enough young pieces on defense that if you're bringing in veteran pieces to kind of fill it out, that's okay because you can still supplement that with what you're doing in the draft. And you're still a very, very young football team. Like, the core of what you are going forward, defensively, you hope is going to be guys like Colvin, and you hope Cyprian steps into that strong safety role, although he hasn't really done that yet, Telvin Smith and Dante Fowler Jr. Like, you hope that that's the core of your defense going forward. That doesn't mean that you only need young pieces on that side of the ball to make it work, and you feel like the offense is good enough that the window ought to be open.
Oh yeah!
Like, it's good enough that the window ought to be open for his team if they can just be okay on the defensive side of the football. So whatever you need to do to make it okay on that side of the ball, it means that you don't necessarily just need 25-year-old free agents. It means that if a guy is 32 and can help you for the next year or two until you get a guy that you do draft that can help you when he's 25, then you go get that guy. And you plug him in and you get that defense good enough that it's not an anchor right now for what you're doing on the offensive side of the ball and what you continue to expect from your offense as it grows in the next year or two.
You've been talking too about, you mentioned injuries and character and where does it fit into who you get and draft and in that sort. I think Dave Caldwell has shown us that he is more of a conservative guy on that front, especially early rounds of the draft. I don't see him going after a Noah Spence if he's not comfortable with him. I mean, they'll do a ton of homework, obviously. So maybe they figure he passed all their tests. I don't see them going after a Miles Jack. I don't see them going after a Jalen Smith even later in the first round. Now, maybe could you jump back in and get a Jalen Smith? You know, that could be one of those second picks in the first. Could you do that? I could see that a little bit. But remember, he's a guy that you can't even count on probably this year. You know, and
at least for the first half of the year.
At least. It's but, like again, it's a but then you're asking a rookie to come back in. Yeah, but I'm saying how much would an impact? Colvin did a good job in his four games, but it's not like he impacted the season.
No.
That guy's not going to make an impact for the entire season. So I just don't see that happening. But it is interesting to see what Dave Caldwell has done in the middle rounds with some of these guys. Character, because of the drug marijuana stuff with Telvin Smith, dropped to the fifth round. Good value, though.
Sure.
Once you did your test on him. And then, of course, Aaron Colvin with the injury to the knee And I think part of that one was spending the time. A big part of that was spending the time with him in Mobile that year and then seeing what he could do. And then, again, ton of value. That was a guy who was projected as high as the second round, early second round. You end up getting him in the fourth. The only other guy we were going through the roster, where else have they taken maybe a little bit of a character chance on a guy in that locker room? And we can't really find many, right? I mean, they've got a locker room that they have stressed all along for 3 years. The makeup of that locker room is guys that love the game of football. You hear that from Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley.
Sure.
Love the game of football, have a passion to play the game of football. That's the guy they've tried to target, whether it's free agency draft, how they've built this roster. And even with the Colvins of the world and Telvin Smiths, they found that in them. I mean, Aaron Colvin's a guy that comes in here sometimes at 1 o'clock in the morning to watch film. And he's told me before he'll go actually out on the practice field at 8 o'clock at night when nobody else is out there and the lights are, you know, down to go work on something that he thought he messed up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a guy that loves the game of football, loves his craft.
Sure.
And so even though they were taking a little bit of a chance, they found that one quality in the guy. Who's the other one we brought up that they might have taken a little bit of chance of? I thought there was a third one when we were going through their roster.
It'll come to me.
Yeah, it'll come to me too. I forget what position group we were looking at. But if you look at their free agents that they've added, there's just no the character stuff, the injury stuff has not really been there. So they've stayed away from most of that if you look
unless
at their entirety of the roster.
Yeah, unless it's a big value to them.
Yeah.
Well, like we said with Telvin and with Colvin and those kind of spots, they felt like, okay, the value is just too overwhelming for us here. And Telvin, it's a combination of things. It's the marijuana hit. You know, and it's the fact that he was an undersized linebacker. And in the NFL, they fall so in love with these measurables, and that's kind of what the combine is about, is how do you measure and all these different things that sometimes it's stupid, but they ignore what they see from a guy on tape. And Telvin was around the ball constantly while he was at Florida State, and he got to Jacksonville, and guess what? He's around the ball constantly.
Yeah.
Like, he is just an instinctive football player at whatever size he's going to be playing at. I disagree with you a little bit on Miles Jack just because I do think his athleticism at the linebacker position is exceptional. And, you know, we talked to a couple guys. Russ Landy came on with us last week and said that he is the best coverage linebacker he's ever graded. Going into the draft. He said the best before him was Luke Kuechly, that this guy is the best coverage linebacker that he's graded in the draft, better than Luke Kuechly. Doesn't mean he thinks he's going to be a better linebacker than Kuechly, but specifically at those coverage skills,
from coverage, yeah,
that he was better than Kuechly. I know last week, I think it was Brugler said that he's the best coverage linebacker he's scouted since Luke Kuechly. He didn't say better than Luke Kuechly, but since Luke Kuechly. And while Miles Jack isn't going to work out at the combine this week, he should be cleared in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
He's way
physically
ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to get an opportunity to really take a look at that knee and where he is physically in that rehab in the next couple of weeks before you get to the draft. So I think teams that are considering him in the top five will have a very good idea of physically where he is. And if he's ready to go in March, then he should be fine once you get to July and August and September. So I think that changes the story with him a little bit. Jalen, the injury was so late.
Yeah, that's tough.
That he's not going to be available basically for the first half of the year. Now, you're drafting guys in the first round because of the impact they're going to be having for you, hopefully for the next 10, not the first 8 games. So maybe there's a consideration at some point if you get back into the first round or drop down in the first round where you seriously have to consider that guy. But that injury is a little bit of a different story just from a timeline perspective than it is with Miles Jack, who I think they said he's gonna weigh in and do all that stuff this week and he's going to do bench press. But
yeah,
he's not doing any of the running drills. But I've seen him on some vines on Twitter doing some of these drills. He's physically pretty good right now. He just doesn't want anybody at the combine messing with that leg until they do the recheck here in about a month. I think then he'll show up for that and let the
– which is the same move Todd Gurley had last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Gurley didn't want to pull it on that knee.
Yeah, and Gurley's a great example of it. You know, listen, I think you're right, Tony. There's not as much. First of all, his timetable is totally different. So from a Jags-only perspective where you could play, which I think is an important part of the equation, I don't think you're taking a guy that you can just sit out for half a year or a year. I think that first-round pick's got to be a guy that's going to make an impact. And I think you're right on that because I don't think the knee injuries scare the hell out of everybody anymore. They used to. I don't think they do, and I think Gurley's a good example of why they don't. But they still are all different. I would be surprised, and I'll stick to, I just think I'll be surprised if the Jags were to take a chance on a guy like that with their first pick, especially in a top 10 type of situation. I think they'll continue to go the more conservative. They know how important those first round hits are. And anything that would waver and not check the box for Dave Caldwell, to me, would be very surprising to see him go that move. And also the position. People talk about, I'm not a huge, like, oh, you can't pick this guy because it's not pick 13 through 20,
right,
and that's where most people pick linebackers. But when you add it all up, a lot of those linebackers don't come right there. Now, obviously, Kuechly does, and if you think he's a franchise-changing linebacker, they do. So you've got to weigh all of it. I don't think the boxes will check on either linebacker for the Jags take. Now, I do think they'll take a linebacker. I think it could come in the second round. I think it could come whatever. They need a young line. I think that's where they've missed, is getting another young linebacker, fast linebacker, behind Posluszny or wherever to groom. They could have done that the last couple of years, and mm-hmm. I think they're behind in getting that linebacker. I think they would have liked to do that the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I think it's the questions about trying to combine the puzzle of free agency and the draft, and free agency gives you some kind of hint as to where they may be looking in the draft, not a total picture of what they're doing with the number five pick in the draft. And look,
especially with Caldwell, he gives himself a lot of different options based off free agency.
And we all get so blind to a lot of the draft. We just talk about number five, and that's a natural thing to do. And you stop considering they got a lot more picks after number five in this draft, and they probably expect to get some pretty significant impact out of the first three guys that they're going to select in the NFL draft. So it's not a complete picture after free agency, but I am curious to see what's going to happen with pass rush in this free agency class and just where everything's going to shake out and wind up, because everybody wants it. And when there are 15, 16 teams in the league that have $30 million to spend, yeah, it's nice to have 75, but where are you going to spend that money? You got to spend it somewhere. Where are you going to spend that money? And what eventually is available to you, whether it's because of your position in the league right now, what you are able to pay these guys, and where they want to be. And I'm curious to see how it's going to shake out. I know Caldwell has a plan. I know that. And I hope that he's able to execute whatever plan he has, like it felt like he was last year when they couldn't go get the safety and couldn't go get the wide receiver. They said, okay, we'll do this instead. And they felt good about what they did in free agency last year. I'm curious to see what that plan is this year. I felt like at this point last year I knew what the plan was in free agency. I feel like I know what the broad plan is in free agency, but the specifics of it are all mystery boxes to me with free agency.
Yeah, I agree.
Year.
I mean, because they can go into different, and we just don't know what the other teams are going to do. The mystery of free agency in itself, because so many teams do have money. I think you're right. I don't think he'll be a careless spender.
No,
but I do think he'll overpay. I mean, I know I'm not talking just overpay from a general standpoint of free agency. I think it will be a little bit of a monopoly money type of feel to get a guy that he really wants. I mean, he knows he's got to get somebody. I think there's pressure on him to get somebody. And so I think he won't be as careful, if you will, because it's a lot of money to spend. I mean, sometimes it's hard to spend it. There's so much of it. And if you start taking guys off like Cobb and McCourty that they want, then you're like, okay, where else are we going? And they obviously were able to get Julius Thomas, but there wasn't as much of a market for Thomas in terms of competition that I think you might see with some of these other guys. I think there might be a little monopoly money type of feel this year, where I haven't really sensed that the last couple of years from Dave Caldwell. I think he usually is a very careful spender and not a careless spender, but I think he has to do it. He has to make something happen in free agency. It's a big time of year for him. The other thing I love about Caldwell, though, it's an underrated part, because we don't really talk and dissect GMs, but I think he has a great feel for everything else. I think he has a great feel in the draft for what other guys are doing and what other guys may do. And you might say, well, doesn't every GM? I don't think so. I think it's an instinctual type of deal where you have to take educated guesses and kind of match boards and what will this guy do. And I think Caldwell's pretty good at that, to the point where they were able to get Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee in the second round because they thought they could get both. They could wait a couple of picks and still get a guy like Allen Robinson. And so they got the value guy, certainly, in Marquise Lee first. And I think it's the same thing in free agency. I think it's a little less it's a little harder to do it, but if you guys got a feel for what's going to happen, where's this guy going to go, it lets you set your table a little bit better and easier. And so I think he's well prepared to make it happen. Now he's just under the gun a little bit to make sure on March 9th he's got a guy walking through these doors signing a pretty big deal.
No doubt about it. And we'll see the plan in action in just a couple of weeks as free agency gets rolling. We're just a couple weeks away from it. Crazy, just the way the NFL calendar works, and crazy how much faster it comes upon you when the Jags aren't going, you know, 3-13.
Yes.
And you're not talking free agency and draft.
I think they should do the schedule in February, like right now.
That'd be fun. They always, it's always like the weekend.
Well, not
the
right
draft.
Now, because they've got the combine. So they got the combine to keep them busy.
Yeah.
So then I guess you're at the 2 week spread. So then they'll do it
they
in
do
like
free agency, and
then
a couple weeks
early
later,
April,
you get the
probably,
schedule,
right?
And then
early
you get the
mid-April.
Draft. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's probably.
They spread it out as much as they can.
I think the NFL doesn't need me to help them out. They've got it figured out.
No, they're doing pretty well. With or without our help, they're doing pretty well. As we talk at 2 hours every day right here on Jaguars Today. Tony Smith, Brent Martineau with you. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight on the other side. Take a look at some of your answers to the question, what is the biggest heartbreaking loss in Jaguars regular season history? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at Brent AS360.
I've got one.
Okay, at 1010XL Tyler, we'll take a look at some of your answers on those, as well as the Facebook page Jaguars Today, as we roll along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition. You a Buffett fan at all, Brent?
Not like a diehard. I couldn't claim that status, but I did see him here.
Yeah? Yeah, how was that?
A couple years ago, a few years back. It was cool. One of the only times I've tailgated. I tailgated for a Buffett concert.
We have very few opportunities to do any of that. Like, I get the press whenever my friends tell me about, you know, tailgating or whatever, as it is apparently Margarita Day across the nation. So a little Buffett certainly fits that.
Reminds me of this time of year, too. I love going a couple times. We've already gone to Key West. Going out of the Keys, baby. That's a good time of year to do it. Of course, he's everywhere down there. But, you know, speaking of tailgating, there is one thing I would love to... I'm not a huge like NASCAR guy, but I really appreciate the week, especially Daytona 500.
Mm-hmm.
I was there yesterday, and I know some of the Jags guys were there, too, ran into them. But I wanted to get an RV for a week sometime and do that.
That does look like it would be fun.
You know, and you just can't be... like, I can't do that.
Right.
It's too much work going on at the same time, but
you got things you got to do.
Yeah,
like, but I can tell you, I never get to tailgate. The last three things I've tailgated are all USA men's soccer games.
Yeah, well,
and
there you go.
That's the two that were here to tell you how far spread apart they were. So when they played Scotland here, and when they played the World Cup warm up, the send off series here, I was there. I actually think I got on TV for that one.
You, we saw you at that one.
Yeah.
So,
because I was wearing the Uncle Sam hat.
You enjoyed it.
And the USA glasses. Yeah, I was having fun. But, and the last time I tailgated was last summer when I went up to watch Team USA, in DC or in Baltimore. It was my vacation week was planned around being able to go see USA men's soccer, and I tailgated for that. But I don't tailgate for the Jags. You know, I don't tailgate for any of the college football because I'm covering it if I'm there, generally speaking. So I don't get to do any of that. It's very rare. So the occasional concert and the sporting event that I'm not there in an official capacity are the only ones that I even get the opportunity to. So every year when we ask you those questions about tailgating, it's only because we want to live through you.
Vicariously through you. But someday we'll do it. Someday we'll get to do it. But I said about Florida, Georgia, like that. There's some of the events that we get to cover, which is really cool to cover. I'm not complaining about covering them, but it would be cool to see it as a fan, too.
Yeah.
And so someday, like, I'll go back, you know, even go into, like, the players. The players, you kind of feel like you're almost there as a fan, but it would be different being at 17 on a Friday not working.
Sure.
And I think Florida, Georgia's a lot like that. And to me, Daytona's like that, too. And Daytona, not really even just for the race as much as maybe for the 3 or 4 days leading up to it, would be cool to just hang out and sit there for.
Speed Weeks is fun.
Wow.
And with everything that happens down there and all the events they have at the racetrack, and, you know, you don't just go to the Daytona 500. You're there for all of it, and it is fun. If you're a racing fan, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
Because there's no other week where it's like that, you know, where there are six, seven events where they're actually on the track doing something. There's no other week where it's like that.
Yep. Usually just the weekend
fans.
Stuff.
Right. You can go watch some of the qualifying if you want to get there early enough in the week. And then you can, if they have it all at the same track that weekend, you can watch the Truck Series and then the, what are they calling it now?
Xfinity now.
Xfinity. Yep. And then the Sprint Cup. You can watch all three on a weekend if they all three happen to be there that week. But for Daytona, you get to watch everything. Like, it's, they have all that. They have the duels. They have, you know, the 24 hours the weekend before. Like,
Sprint Unlimited.
Yeah. They do all that stuff for you. It's kind of
it's
a
good.
Cool deal.
Someday I'll do it. I'll invite you all down.
All right, sounds good. When you get the trailer, let me know. I'll come down there for at least a day or two to enjoy it. Let's get to the fan feedback.
I might be like 60 by the time that happens.
Well, it is what it is. I'll get to the fan feedback spotlight here as we ask you, Jaguars fans, every day, what drives you? Today we're asking, what is the most heartbreaking regular season loss in Jaguars team history? We know 99 in the playoffs is the worst. It's the worst. It's a playoff game. There's nothing like losing playoff games, especially when you're the favorite in a playoff game at home in the conference title game after the season you had for the same team to beat you three times. We know that that's the worst loss in Jaguars history, and it's the one that everyone points back to. Also, the last time they played a home playoff game was 1999 in that AFC Championship game. But I know that feels bad, Jaguars fans, but Buffalo fans haven't even played a playoff game since you lost in the AFC Championship game in 1999. They lost in the wild card round that year, and that was it.
That's amazing.
That's the last time the Buffalo Bills have been in the playoffs.
Yeah, there are a lot of teams that are in kind of the Jags and Bills. Not a lot, but a good amount. You know, more than you think. That it just doesn't happen with regularity. It's amazing we see the same teams over and over do it. And I was struck at the Super Bowl when we talked to Chad Brown, mm-hmm. right? Pittsburgh. You guys did an interview with him as well.
Yeah.
And he talked about like the ownership and just how you look at the organizations over time. And at the time of their success or their run, it's their ownership. And you know, you point to Pat Bowlen, you point to Kraft, and you point to Rooney's. And he thinks he was high on the Jags because of their ownership right now. So I thought that was interesting. Maybe we're about to see a little bit of a run.
Hopefully. It'd be nice.
So everybody that's high on the Raiders, I'm not sure they would say that about the, you know, ownership. There's some questions
about whether they're even going to be playing football
in
the next couple of years. But some of the answers we got today on the fan feedback spotlight from Jarrell, 2010 late season game at Indianapolis for the division title. So close yet so far. Yeah, that was a team that you never felt like had any business being in the divisional title race, but they were technically alive there late in the season against Indianapolis. From Black Dog, easy. The second of the three losses to the Titans in 99 was sickening. Hashtag remember to hate the Titans. From Cody, the 2010 Colts game that would have basically won us the division, so disappointing. And from Stoff here, we got Colts Jags this year up in Indianapolis. I've never been that disgusted in the team ever. And that was certainly a game that they found a couple different times and opportunities to lose, including both the missed field goals there, but felt like they were better than the Indianapolis Colts that day and lost the football game, which Jacksonville hasn't been good enough to be better than anybody on a certain day and lose the game and make anything of that season at this point.
Yeah, that was a frustrating one. Yeah, it's interesting. Charles Miller says the game that they won, actually, against the Colts to give them Andrew Luck. But I actually go back to the game in 2010. Remember 2010, 8-5, chance to make the playoffs, go on a little bit of a run. Indianapolis was in that mix. That was the last game they lost, right? Indianapolis that year to make it 8-8. But they lost a game here against the Redskins in overtime, 20-17.
Was that Brunell?
That was...
No, Brunell was the one before that. 2006, probably.
Yeah, 2010. It was Garrard throwing the pick. And it might have been was that his last pass as a Jag?
I'm not sure.
At home here? Because it wouldn't have been his last pass. But he threw the pick, I think, in OT because it was before the rule changes.
Let me take a look.
And so that was the one I remember, 2010, having a chance and could have gone at the time. They would have been 8-6, so they could have gone to 9-6 with that win. Ended up losing to the Redskins.
Yep, that was the last pass in a Jaguars uniform. Actually, the last pass.
Why didn't he play? Well, why didn't he play? He didn't play in the finale.
It's
against the Colts?
Nope.
I can't remember why.
But it's yeah, Washington is the last game log he has in his career. Is that pass?
Yeah.
In overtime. So not a such a happy memory for him walking up the tour.
But it was part of the I think everybody points to that year. They point to the Indy game because they had a chance to go up there and do it. But I think they forget about the Redskins game that was here and they lost in overtime. And that could have been I don't remember the exact circumstances, but obviously he had a chance to go to 9-6 right then, and the losing kind of just kept snowballing and ended up in three straight losses to close the year. Really the last time there's been a real excitement in Jacksonville about possibly making the playoffs. Thought we were starting to get that a little bit this year, and then obviously down the stretch the Jags went 1-5.
Yeah, just couldn't get it done. It felt like, it again, we've talked about it a lot, but just the opportunity they had after the way they won that game up in Baltimore, it was like, okay, now it's right there in front of you. They got the softest schedule in the league. Go make something happen, and they just couldn't.
Yeah.
Couldn't get anything done in the last 6 weeks. Brent, fun today.
Yeah, man, it's over. What, this two-hour stuff goes pretty quick.
I know, the grueling two-hour workday. I know you still got plenty to do this afternoon, back with Frank Frangie and Rick this afternoon.
Yes, sir, before they go head up to the Combine with you. So we'll have a big Combine week, of course, and we'll talk a little bit of everything this afternoon, including our trip to Daytona. More on that, and got a big basketball game coming up this week, too, with UNF and JU. This place doesn't usually buzz about basketball, but people are talking about that game. Even in the building, they were asking a little bit.
Sure.
As I was walking through the halls.
Already sold out, by the way.
So, yeah, the game sold out. Now, listen, you got to be a little careful saying 4 days before already sold out. I mean, there's seats about six people at Swisher Gymnasium. but it'll be a cool atmosphere. Different. We talked about the atmosphere at UNF last year for the ASUN Championship. This one will be totally different. Very unique. I don't think we've seen it like this ever before. And it should be a lot of fun Thursday. So we'll talk about that this afternoon. By the way, Ocho Fisho chimes in and then appreciate it. Garrard broke his hand. That's why he didn't play in that last game against the Texans. So which game was it against the Colts then that year? Maybe that started that three-game losing skid.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I'd have to
go back and look it up.
Again,
but
yeah.
No, they lost. They were 8-5. They lost three in a row. But I think people forget, if it was Texans and Colts, they forget about that Washington game. It was in overtime. And the last pass for Garrard in a Jags uniform.
Yep, it's a sad one, and it was kind of a sad question today. So sorry to
drag you down
a painful road, Jaguars fans, but we'll have a bright and cheery one tomorrow, I promise you, on the Fan Feedback Spotlight. Brent, thanks so much for sitting in with me today.
It was fun.
And we'll talk to you, I'm sure, throughout the week with the Combine. I know you'll be on with Frank and Rick. And are you guys sending anybody up for the Combine this year? Or?
We are not. We're not going.
Okay.
We thought about going, but we're not going. You know, I kind of don't feel it's a great TV event. So, didn't go.
Despite how much it's on TV. It's kind of ironic.
Well, it is. But
but from y'all's perspective, I can understand.
Yeah, because we can just grab it like they do. Yeah. We can't do what they do.
Yeah,
with
it's tough
you know?
To get the kind of access you would want from that perspective.
Everything's on a podium mostly.
Yeah.
And so we can get that now in TV land without having to go.
Sure, no doubt about it. So thanks again for stopping by, and hopefully we'll get
you
again. Hey,
I'll come in again
soon.
With you.
Yeah.
You just got to pay me as much as you paid me today.
Yeah, and I'll make sure Mike's not here. you're not allowed to do shows with Mike Dempsey anymore. It's kind of a rule here on the station. We'll welcome in the boys of XL Primetime next as we continue along and conclude a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!